Scott Drew has always had strong feelings about the death penalty, but those feelings were divided. When he was a prosecutor, he found the death penalty useful to have in the criminal code, but as a defense attorney, capital punishment made Mr. Turow worry about the imperfections of justice. He has seen murder close up, and as a novelist and author, Scott Turow has laid bare that while he does not like the death penalty, he thinks even less of those who commit cruel and incomprehensible crimes. After 13 convicted and condemned killers were exonerated in Illinois, Scott Turow was appointed to Governor George Ryan's commission to review the death penalty. That experience caused him, as writing a book can, to discover his own thinking. Scott Turow's new book is definitely nonfiction. It's called Ultimate Punishment, A Lawyer's Reflections on Dealing with the Death Penalty. Scott Turow joins us from Chicago, and thanks so much for being with us.
Scott, thank you always.
You, in many ways, begin your thinking on the death penalty by talking about the impact that murder has in the life of the family who experiences it.
They always come back to the same thing again and again, which is that there's something fundamentally unfair that they have lost this person, and if there is no death penalty, that the killer will live. The point that they make again and again is, you tell me any other crime where we let the criminal end up better off than the victim.
Recognizing that there are imperfections in the judicial system, does the very sense of moment, in a way, of a capital case encourage more mistakes to be made?
The paradox of capital punishment is that if we're applying it to the very worst cases, the most heinous, those are the crimes that, by their very nature, most excite our emotions, and that make it hard for us to deal with those cases rationally. I think it's the very nature of these cases that has led to the relatively high rate of exonerations.
Some supporters of the death penalty acknowledge that mistakes will be made and say there's a price to be paid for the interest of the overall good sometime.
I think those people are forthright, because that's the reality. If we're going to have a death penalty, then we're going to execute somebody who is innocent. The people who, as I say, were forthright enough to say, look, that occasional cost is worth the benefit, at least are being honest about the way the system will operate. Where I part company with them is when we get around to defining the benefit. The tangible benefits, like deterrence, I don't think that case has been proven. Obviously, though, if you prove that every execution, as some deterrent proponents have said, saves 8 lives, then the fact that we were going to occasionally execute somebody who was innocent might be worth it, because the gain outruns the costs. But I don't think that the case for deterrence can be made. I don't think the case for cost savings can be made. The principal reason that Americans subscribe to the death penalty, I believe, is as a moral statement, that for ultimate evil there must be ultimate punishment. And that moral message ends up being lost if you are executing the wrong people.
What about the argument that a good many, what I'll freely characterize as savage murderers who are condemned to life in prison, in fact continue to be murderous in prison?
It is a profound question. You know, what do we do with those folks whose very life seems to be potential menace to everybody else? And the contemporary answer is to place them in supermax facilities. Now, this is very harsh confinement. A prisoner in a supermax is allowed no flesh-to-flesh contact with other human beings. It's a technological marvel. Doors are opened by remote control. This is a hard way to live.
You visited, in fact.
I did. I visited the supermax at TAMS in connection with my duties on the commission. And, you know, that facility is under constant legal challenge, including suits brought by friends of mine in the Chicago legal community who claim that that kind of isolation from other human beings is cruel and unusual. And my answer is, you know, you can't have it both ways. If you want a world without capital punishment, you have to be willing to concede that there are incredibly dangerous human beings out there who have to be dealt with in severe ways, albeit without execution.
I'd like to ask you a few questions that are specific to the commission you sat on.
Sure.
How many people on that commission changed their minds
there were two points in time where inclinations on the commission were known. When we started, a reporter said, how many of you, and he was talking to 14 people, are against the death penalty? And of the 14, four persons raised their hands. I was not among them because I didn't know how I felt about the death penalty. By the time we ended, there was a majority against the death penalty.
For someone whose life and the life of his literature has been in the law, you wind up after this process with a statement that emphasizes a sense of humility about our legal system and the place we should assign it in life and death matters. If I could get you to read that section.
Sure. The legal process will never fully heal us. The failure of the law to deliver all that we ask from it is probably the essential theme of all of my novels, and even of the one earlier nonfiction book I wrote about being a law student. I revere the enterprise of the law, but it does not function flawlessly. It neither finds the truth nor dispenses justice with the reliability it's obliged to claim. The law's sharp-edged rules never cut through the murk of moral ambiguity, nor do they fully comprehend or address the complexities of human motivation and intention. And just punishment alone does not render the world one we want to live in.
Scott Turow, novelist, author of the new book, Ultimate Punishment, A Lawyer's Reflection on Dealing with the Death Penalty, speaking with us from Chicago. Scott, thank you very much.
Thank you.